With podcasting fast becoming the most popular way for people to consume content, more people than ever are getting into the medium. The question is, what kind of podcasts are even out there? Well, this show answers that question, and the guest coming up shares how they got started, what their process looks like, what their show is all about, and who their target listener is. Maybe that's you. After we wrap up, head over to the show notes to find out more about our guest and their show and see what you think of their creation. You might just be their next number one fan. Let's jump into the episode now.
Very fast. So I guess we'd call it an occasional podcaster.
Yeah.
You know, I only ever promised one episode a month. And so I've been exceeding that on the routine, and that makes me very happy, but because it's pretty much a labor of love for me. So that's been A-plus all around. And every time I'm about ready to drop an episode, I think, man, this is like the best one I ever did. You know, I always have that like sense of anticipation.
Yeah.
And then the weird thing is that you click the publish button and then nothing happens. It's the sound of silence. Because even your most hardcore fans, you know, they don't get a chance to listen like the minute it drops, right? So like three days later is when things start happening. So it's like this pretty anticlimactic thing.
I hear you. Yeah, that's something when I started up this podcast, I was like, all right, this is going to be exciting. And it's like you said, it is a labor of love. I mean, sometimes it takes a little while to build up the audience, but it's an art form more than anything, you know, just kind of getting it out and expressing yourself and meeting cool people. That's what keeps me going. That's what gets me out of bed, man.
Yeah, I know. And that's why I like doing what I do on my little show, is that I'm just talking to fascinating people.
Yeah.
And I try as much as I can to branch out and get people on that I wouldn't ordinarily meet. And so that is always exciting for me, is when I can get on sort of these really offbeat kind of guests that are sort of, you know, a couple standard deviations away from the norm. That pleases me to no end.
Oh, that is so cool. That is so cool. Yeah, with the pandemic, I mean, this has often been, and I felt this myself, but it's something I'm picking up on as a trend with a lot of other hosts as well, is, you know, without networking meetings and like physically meeting in groups of people, like that's not cool anymore. Cool kids aren't doing that because pandemic. You know, this is the next best thing. You know, and I personally think it's better because you get that one-on-one interaction with people, which you don't really get at a networking meeting. Like, yeah, you might meet a bunch of people, but you don't get that. Like, you can sit down and talk with people, but you can do that a lot more on a podcast. So for me, I mean, it's been an awesome networking opportunity, just like it has for you.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, let me turn off this screen behind me because I see it's glaring. It's bothering me.
Okay.
All right.
There we go.
There we go. That's much better.
There we go. Bravo 6 going dark. Here we go. Well, what was it that got you started in podcasting? Like what, you know, what's your upbringing like?
Oh man. Well, I was early into listening to podcasts. We're talking since 2006. I've been listening to podcasts, and this is even before I had mobile devices. I was listening on my computer back in 2006 to some early tech podcasts, and I've never stopped listening to podcasts. And I've always been a huge Star Trek nerd, but I never really listened to that many Star Trek podcasts, actually. And what happened was I got invited on a Star Trek podcast by people that I knew from the Star Trek convention scene. Mm-hmm. And they invited me on because I live in Las Vegas. And at the time, it remains to be seen if this is still the case, but at the time, it was the world's largest Star Trek convention, used to take place every year here in Vegas. And so they wanted a local on because they were doing sort of a convention show. And they said, hey, let's get a local on who can talk about, you know, answer questions about, you know, where do we go to the grocery store? What is there to do outside the hotel? You know, give us sort of the local perspective, right, for those who are flying in. Mm-hmm. And I came on and, you know, it was fine. And the person who was running the podcast said to me, you know, you should consider doing a show for our network. My initial reaction was no. Not because I had any concerns about the technology aspects, because I do some light sort of audio stuff at work right now, and I always have, so that was never an issue. It's just that I felt like a lot of the high quality things in Star Trek podcasting universe were being done. And so even if you take it out of the world of Star Trek and think of like, say, a sports podcast, right? How many kind of podcasts can you do? You can interview players, you can You can do shows where you talk about the latest games that happened and sort of review them and what the trends are and what's happening. You can do topical shows, you know, the greatest baseball players in history, or the history of the Baltimore Orioles or something. And so in Star Trek podcasting, the same thing was being done 10 different ways to Sunday by 1,000 different people. There were people who were doing episode rewatches, there were people who were covering the news, there were people who were covering topics. And I just felt like everything was being done. And so unless I felt like I could do something that was interesting or new, I just didn't have an interest in it. And strangely enough, I was listening to a tech podcast, a shout out to Adam Christensen from the MacCast. And I'd been a listener of his since 2006. And I was listening to one of his episodes, and he commented that, you know, the number one thing about podcasting for me isn't really the show. It's about this community that's sprung up around it. And for some reason, the key turned in my head at that minute. And I said, ah, that's the show. I don't want to do a podcast about Star Trek. And I don't. What I do is a podcast about Star Trek fans. And why do you love this show so much? Like, I'm a weirdo like you. So we're going to sit down, fellow weirdo, and we're going to figure out why in the world we are so interested in this. And that's the show. So I don't really do the news at all. My episodes are sort of unmoored in time. We try not to talk about the things of the day, but it's really about what's your story in Star Trek, man? You know, how did you get into this? And why is it of interest to you? And what elements of Star Trek have really influenced your life? And maybe a particular episode has changed their life in some way, or something that an interaction that they had in some way with other fans or people from the show or something like that had a significant impact on their life. And that's the stuff that we talk about on my show. So it's really an examination of fandom. And Star Trek happens to be the fandom that we're talking about.
Man, this really, I probably could be a fit for your show because growing up, my dad and I used to watch Star Trek in the evenings, and it would be technically past my bedtime, but it's okay. It's father-son bonding. And probably, I think the episode that really sticks out in my mind, we watch a lot of Next Generation, and then we got into Voyager and Deep Space Nine later on. And I think the one in The Next Generation was the one where Picard like lived out an entire lifetime on this alien planet. And you know, he
It
was
was in his head. The episode's called The Inner Light. It's a very popular one.
That was, oh my goodness, that hit me right in the feels. And for him to come out of that and be like, wow, it's only been, you know, a little while, but
Yeah,
I lived out an
27
entire,
minutes.
yeah. And he's like, and he learned how to play the little flute thing and he had it with him. And it's like, man, it seemed different more than any other episode, you know, and that really made a big impact. So this is just a dose of nostalgia for me. You know, my dad passed away about 5 years ago. So every time Star Trek something comes on, I'm like the only sci-fi nerd in the house. My wife is like, yeah, it's not really my thing. You know, it's not Doctor Who, it's different, but it's not my thing. And I'm like, come on, this is my heritage we're talking about here. We gotta watch it, or Stargate or something. Just gotta watch it. It's like, nah, she's not into it. So I haven't gotten my dose
Yeah,
lately.
my darling bride is not interested in any kind of science fiction at all. So she has zero interest in this. So the other thing is that this is really my outlet for the fandom, right? I mean, I used to go to the convention every year when we had such things, right? And that seems to be slowly picking up as we sort of the pandemic is sort of tapering off a little bit. So I'll continue to do that. But even people who go to conventions a lot, you know, there's only so many a year. And that's one of the things I really enjoy about the show is that it gives me an opportunity to really geek out about this stuff with other nerds. And so this is really my outlet because in my day-to-day life, I'm not around a lot of Star Trek fans.
Well, what do you do in your day-to-day? Like, what keeps you busy when you're not busy talking to random strangers on the internet about podcasting?
Oh, I have the best job in the world. I run learning and development for a property and casualty insurance firm that services the high net worth and ultra high net worth marketplace.
That sounds
So.
really geeky, man. It's almost like actuarial work, you know? It's like I know at a high level what he does, but you know.
Just, you know, if you get hired at a company, you got to know how to work the computer systems. You got to learn the products. You got to learn the services. You got to learn the way that they do things and the policies and procedures and all the client service aspects. And so that's part of what me and my team does. And then also as part of that, there's also some leadership development that we do, skill up development for colleagues and all of that. And then there's people who come from sort of mass market insurance companies that sort of have to unlearn how a lot of that stuff works, because in the ultra high net worth space, it's a little different.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you have a scrape on your Toyota Camry, there's certain things that happen if you have a mass market company. And if you're dealing with sort of high end insurance, you know, you have like a collector vehicle that's one of a kind in the world. Mm-hmm. There's a lot different things that happen if you have a scrape on it. And so like the insurance doesn't respond in the same way for those kinds of policies. So anyway, that's incredibly boring, but I actually love that work. And that's what I do.
Hey,
so I don't do the insurance,
myself,
by the way.
Man.
So
yeah.
So don't send me your insurance questions, because I'm not the insurance guy. I'm a learning and development guy.
We'll be like, we'll send you the Dear John letters. Like, what happens if I don't know. I don't know.
Talk to your agent.
Talk to your agent. I'm not the guy. No, that's one of the things I did too years ago. I used to work at a reinsurance company. So it was like, it wasn't auto. It was more like life insurance type stuff. Mm-hmm. But there's so much like crunchy math that goes into figuring out like what the rates are, what mm-hmm. situations, what conditions. And there's some dang morbid stuff in there too. Like there's a bajillion ways that we can die. It's like you get the sense of like, wow, we're really fragile, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I hear that. So what does your process look like, you know, when you're getting ready? All right, oh boy, I'm gonna do a show. How do you find guests? How do you record?
Yeah.
What's your environment like? Like what, you know, kind of give me a slice of life here.
Sure. I would say that's probably, I think, half the battle. As far as it, when I think critically about Trek Profiles, which is my show, it's really about curating the guests and deciding who I want to invite on. Because I have people who want to be on the show, who are submitting themselves to me, which is great. Mm-hmm. And I keep those and I want to get those people on, but I only do, like I said, about an episode a month. And so I have to be very deliberate. And so even when I have a high quality guest that I really want to get on, sometimes they're too similar to a previous guest. So I want to kind of organize for production purposes, like that timeline to look a little differently. So sometimes people have done interviews with me and the episode hasn't come out for 9 months, just because I've had too many guests of that particular type or with a very similar kind of story. Mm-hmm. So I'll want to put that out. So really, I spend a lot of my time just looking and trying to consume vast quantities of Star Trek material that's out there on the interwebs and finding guests that are not necessarily presenting themselves to me that I think would be fascinating to have on the show.
Yeah.
And so I got all kinds of Google alerts and all kinds of subscriptions and all kinds of website forum memberships. And finding these just off the wall guests that are hardcore Star Trek people, that's half the show right there, is just getting those people and talking to them, sometimes sending a blind email or a blind Twitter DM or something and inviting them on and just having fantastic conversations about it. So that's really the biggest struggle for me, is just finding guests that are super interesting. Mm-hmm. Because for me, the thing that I really want to get into on the show isn't this idea that, well, that's a great episode. Yeah, it's a great episode. All right, great. What else are we talking about? This other great episode. Oh, that was also a great episode. I don't want to do that, right? That's not what's interesting. What's interesting to me is when someone says, you know, I have a really unusual trajectory in my life, and it was altered because of something that happened in the show. And so when I see things like that, that is alarm bells for me. That's when that's like, okay, I got to get this person on the show. Just as an example, I'll give you a really wild one, which is, I can't remember how I came across this. It might've been linked off something I saw on Reddit somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I came across a blog by a sex worker, and she had all this Star Trek in there. And I was like, okay, I got to go find out about this. Right. So, yeah. And she had a large body of work that she had been publishing. And so I sent her a message and I was like, hey, you know, do you want to talk about Star Trek? And she's like, absolutely. So I was like, you know, this I got to understand, right. You know, sex worker who blogs and has all these Star Trek references, like this is definitely unusual. Right. Yeah. So I really enjoyed that. That was Maggie McNeil. That was quite a while ago. That was, what was that about? Let me look it up here. Uh, episode 29. So yeah, so I got her on. I attended a Star Trek convention and I saw this astrophysicist was giving lectures about Star Trek and the science in Star Trek. And I'm like, oh, I got to get her on. So that was Dr. Aaron McDonald, yep. Who, by the way, now works for Star Trek.
Oh, my goodness.
She's a science advisor on the show, and she got her start by being on the convention circuit, right? And I'm not taking any credit for that. That's all her. But I was a small part of just, you know, introducing her, I think, to a little bit wider audience. But I was a really, really tiny, minuscule part of that. It's all hard work on her part. But a fantastic guest to get on the show. So looking for these kinds of people is really the main thing. Once I do that, what I do is I have a very extensive prep because I'm a high structure person. So I have a really detailed, organized email that I send with like links to YouTube videos about how to do a local recording, how to prepare your room, how to look your best and sound your best. Not that I do video, but sometimes every now and then I may snap a little photo to use on social media of a recording, but I don't ever keep the video recordings that I do when we're recording the podcast. It's audio only. So I set that up, and then we usually record in Squadcast, which I really like because it has really high audio quality. In fact, they just bumped up their bit rate to 48,000, which is kind of nice. So, and it's basically a double ender, unlike Zoom, which is kind of a fake double ender. So when we're recording in Zoom, it's recording locally on the host's machine, both audio streams.
Right.
So what you're getting is if there's an internet hiccup, it's going to be in the audio track.
Right.
Whereas Squadcast is actually sending the local recording directly up to Squadcast where it's being reassembled. So, and the browser is buffering all that and controlling it. So even if there's an internet hiccup, it doesn't show up in the audio.
Right.
But I still do a local recording. So I get four files out of it, you know, for me and my guests. And so then what I do is after the recordings, which in my case typically run, you know, I've done recordings that have gone 3.5 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's a long form deep dive type show, and edited, it'll be less than that, of course, but because I do a pretty heavy edit. And so then what we'll do is I let those marinate on my hard drive, and I just sort of open up the little folder and I look at them like my little chickadees, you know, and I kind of pick the best one that I'm feeling, you know, ooh, which one of you little pretties is it going to be, right?
Yeah.
And part of it is just production, you know, like if it's been just, you know, too many guys, I feel like I got to get a female voice in there. Or if it's, you know, too many people want to talk about the same episodes or have similar stories, I always want to contrast the next episode in some way as best I can with whatever I have. And so then I just pick those episodes. I load up those interview tracks and I just do a laborious and preposterously overwrought editing process. So I do a pretty heavy edit and cutting out as many filler sounds as I reasonably feel like I can get away with. I'm not trying to make anyone sound like a BBC presenter. But I also feel that it's a waste of my listeners' time to hear someone say, well, you know, it's just not useful, right? That's not what they're tuning in for. So I just want to make the episodes tight for utility purposes and respecting my listeners' time. And that's the bulk of it. Once I feel like I got those two interview tracks, mine and my guest, and the bonus material, which I sometimes have, that's when I feel like the episode is basically on its way. So once those interviews are done, because the wrappers for me are nothing, you know, the little front and back matter, that's nothing. I can do that in a couple hours. So once I have those interviews done, I'll cut the wrappers together, put in anything that I have to put in. I have an automated co-host that's kind of a Star Trek computer voice. So I do his stuff. I generate his speech, drop it in. Produce it, send it out to Libsyn, and off we go. The other thing that does take some time, though, is I produce pretty extensive show notes for each episode. And if anybody's listening to this and you have an interest, you go to trekprofiles.com and you look at any of the episodes, you'll see that I've got very detailed notes with like every single topic we talk about. I've got every episode we talk about listed there. Sometimes my guests will send me photos of things. Like as we record this, I have a guest that I haven't released yet, but he's got an extensive amount of Star Trek tattoos, like a lot. And, you know, it's one thing to talk about them on an audio podcast, but I was like, dude, you send me those photos, I'm putting them out, you know? So yeah. He sent me like a whole gallery of all of his Star Trek tattoos. So that's the kind of stuff I'll post up on the website. So making those show notes typically takes some time because I try to be as detailed as I can. I actually started making those show notes for me. Just so I could remember like what we talked about. Mm-hmm. But then I said, well, why not just post these? Like there's nothing secret about it. So I started posting those up there. And so each episode kind of has this rough three-part format. Initially, we just do what I call fandom exploration. You know, mm-hmm. What's your first Star Trek memory, bro? You know, how'd you get into this? And interestingly enough, I've started having on some people who just recently got into Star Trek as grown-up people. They're not the, you know, oh, I was born into it, man. You know, here's a picture of me when I was 2 years old with a Spock bear, you know, which a recent guest actually has that picture, right? But I got people like, yeah, I thought Star Trek was like this cheesy 60s show and it was stupid. And then I watched it. And now I'm hooked and I'm watching 800 hours worth of episodes. So I'm having those kind of guests on. Those have been just fascinating. But, you know, people, have you ever been to a convention? Have you ever cosplayed? Do you collect anything? That kind of stuff. So I call that fandom exploration. Then we jump into whatever episodes that they find personally meaningful. And it's, again, it's not necessarily the best episodes, but it's episodes that had an effect on them. Mm-hmm. And then we move into why Star Trek even matters to them. Why are you spending 3 hours talking to some rando on the internet about it, right? Why does it matter in your life? And that's really how each interview concludes, really the interview portion. Then we jump into my lightning round, which is always five multiple choice terrible questions about Star Trek. And yep. They have to survive my no-win scenarios. They're not trivia questions, but they're questions where all the choices are not so great.
Yeah.
So like a recent example, I think, from one of the recent episodes was, you know, if you had to survive in a horrible climate, which one would you pick, right? The Vulcan deserts or the frozen Andorian wastes? You know, neither one of those is the right answer. It's they're both terrible. So they faced my Kobayashi Maru lightning round. And I've recently extended an invitation to my listeners to submit questions to me to use on the show. And if they do, they get a shout out and a credit on the show notes page. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
And then we just wrap it up from there. And then if there's any bonus material, which is basically like if we end up having an interesting talk about stuff that's not Star Trek or stuff that's just a little too in the weeds, I put that at the end. So sometimes there's an extensive amount of bonus tracks at the end of the episode that people can listen to if they want or not. So that's kind of optional stuff. So that's basically my process. I edit in Adobe Audition. I always do my final mastering in Fission and publish on Libsyn. And that's it. That's the process.
Man, that is really involved. And I got the reference too when you were like the unwinnable problem. I'm like, I wonder if there's a way to like hack that and actually get the right answers, you know?
So what I do is after each episode drops, I then tweet out the questions on Twitter as polls. Mm-hmm. And my listeners can weigh in and choose answers. And not that there's a right answer, but I think if you do really well on the Kobayashi Maru, in my thinking, your answers match up with my Twitter followers' answers. Not that there's a correct answer, but I guess if you wanted to have sort of an objective measure of victory, I guess, mm-hmm. It would be going 5 for 5 and coming up with the same answers as my followers on Twitter, I guess. That might be the way to hack it, I guess.
Yeah.
It's not to give the answer that you would want to give, but give the answer that you think the majority of my listeners would give.
There we go. Game in the system. That is keeping in tune. What would Captain Kirk do? What would Jay do? What would James T. Kirk do?
But I will say this. I will say this. And I even tell my guests this straight up front. Is like, I do not give, you will not get the questions ahead of time. When you hear those interview questions on the show, those five questions, they are really getting those questions in real time. So sometimes I'll trim out a little silence, but there's no preview. They have no idea what I'm going to ask them.
Man, that is really cool. That is really cool. You've got a really unique way to go about it. It's like a full ecosystem that surrounds your podcast. That's neat. I like that. I'm curious.
I try.
Would you ever pull anybody like, Would you ever want to pull anybody on from like the Roddenberry family? Like, would that be the epitome guest? Like, oh my goodness, what if I can get somebody from that family? You
So
know?
this is interesting that you bring this up. So there's a guy who, you know, they're making new Star Trek shows. It, just in case you didn't know, there's new episodes coming out on Paramount Plus, which is an app you got to subscribe for. But they're so there's new episodes, and they recently put on a guy named Noah Averback Katz as a guest actor, and he was on for a couple episodes. And it turns out that Noah is a huge Star Trek nerd. Like going back to his childhood, right? This is not like some guy who was cast on the show and then he's like, now I'm a fan. No, he has like legit fan cred. He's got pictures of himself, like 12 years old, wearing Star Trek uniforms and at conventions, right? So this is a guy who's in the tribe. And so I was like, I got to get this guy on the show, right? So I blind sent him a DM. He doesn't know me from anybody. And I said, hey, you want to come on and talk about Star Trek, right? And he's like, absolutely, I want to do that. So he was a guest on my show. That was episode 44, I think it was. And one of the questions we had, or one of the topics of discussion, was, you know what? I actually don't care that you've been on the show. The thing to be on my show is that you have to be a fan. Because question one is always the same question, which is, are you a Star Trek fan? And if you can't say yes, I don't want you. And so there have been actors who were like, hey, you know, for me, it was a job. I took the job. I love the fans. I love all of you. I love doing this stuff, you know, but I've never watched an episode. Like even the episodes I'm in. Well, I don't want that person on my show, right? But and that's not a negative comment about them. It's just that my show is about the fandom. And if you can't self-proclaim to be a member of the fandom, and if you haven't watched any episodes, like that's disqualifying, right? So for me, that's how I think about it. And so a member of the family or people that have been involved in Star Trek, you know, those are not the qualifications I'm looking for. It doesn't exclude them, but it doesn't include them either.
Okay. Solid. Man, this is just, I always get some wild ideas about my own shows when I talk with people, and you've actually inspired me. There's some different things that I'm kind of rattling around in my head here, but
Well, your show is like podcasters for, you know, about podcasters, right? I mean, would you want to have somebody on who's like, well, I listen to podcasts, but I would never make one because I think that's stupid. Well,
No, not at
why would
all.
you don't want to talk to that person, right? That's not what you're doing.
Yeah, it's not, it's not. But just the format of it, you know, how like the end goal, it's like the podcast that you've got is, like I said before, it's a whole ecosystem. I mean, you're involving, like, this is a tool for you to be in touch with the fan base, and it's not like, okay, it's just the podcast and that's it. Like, it touches everything else. You're
Oh
building
yeah.
a huge tribe with
Oh yeah.
this.
And you know, the big thing for me is just showcasing these people that have these incredible stories about how Star Trek influenced them. I mean, I had on I think this one guest, Jhené Fowler, she actually wrote a piece that I believe was up on StarTrek.com. So StarTrek.com, the main website that's owned by Paramount for the show, actually allows pitches from people who are not published writers. So anybody who's listening to this, you can, there's rules that they have posted that you have to follow, but you can pitch to write an article for StarTrek.com. I have been published on StarTrek.com. So if you search for my name and StarTrek.com, you'll see an article I wrote about an episode called Space Seed for Valentine's Day. And for those fans out there who know Star Trek, you're thinking, I start Space Seed is like not a Valentine's Day episode. And it, in fact, it is horrible. That is not an episode that has anything to do with Valentine's Day. So you'd have to read the article to find out why I wrote about it. But anyway, I read an article by this young lady, Jhené Fowler. No, it wasn't on Star Trek. It was on Medium. I'm sorry. It wasn't on StarTrek.com. It was on Medium. But she had written how, when she was very young, she was her mom was a single parent, and she basically grew up in a cult, a full-on cult. And the only show that her mother would let her watch was Star Trek. And what she learned from Star Trek led her to question the cult, eventually leaving the cult, and now she's anathema to her own family. And she wrote a lot about this. And I have links up to all that. If people are interested, you can go to Trek Profiles and search for Jhené, and you'll find links to all of her stuff. But I mean, that's like an amazing story, right? I mean, that's the kind of stuff where you think, you know, this is just some TV show, right? But then you take a look at how these pivots have happened in people's lives because of something that happened on this crazy TV show. And it's just earth-shatteringly cool.
Mm-hmm.
So
And
that's what
I know
I'm
somebody.
after.
Well, I know somebody who actually left a cult. I'm going to make a note to myself and be like, hey, you got to track this episode down and give it a listen, because I wonder how much of that would relate. Well, this has really been neat chatting with you, man. And this, seriously, I mean it from the bottom of my heart. Like, it means a lot what you're doing for me personally, because, man,
well,
I miss
thanks,
my
Michael.
dad. I miss my dad, you know, and it's been 5 years, and I fondly remember what it was like sitting there watching, you know, kind of that half sleepy mode that, you know, wow, it's like, there's like a different layer of reality there. And you're just enjoying spending time with family and watching a show. And it's really near and dear to my heart, man. So you had mentioned before, you said where your podcast was located is trekprofiles.com. Is that where to go?
Yep. I'm pretty much everywhere, Trek Profiles. So the website is trekprofiles.com. That's where all of our show notes are. There's also a how to listen page where I have links to every single platform that exists. So we're on wherever you get your audio, I'm there. Spotify, Apple, Google, Ghana, you name it, Stitcher, you name it, we're there. So and maybe I'm even on YouTube if you want, but it's just audio only, but it is published up to YouTube. So wherever you get your audio, you can find my show. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, surprisingly, I'm at Trek Profiles, and also facebook.com/Trek Profiles. So I'm on all the media. I do all the things. And if you are listening to this and you think this is the kind of show that I might want to submit my name to be on, there's actually a contact me page on trekprofiles.com for specifically submitting yourself as a guest. So if that's something you want to do, that'd be the way to go. And, you know, give the show a listen. The one thing I would say that if you're wanting to get into my show, the great thing about it is that it's absolutely all one-off episodes. You can start anywhere and there's no continuing story. You don't have to like tune in next week to find out what happens.
Yeah.
But the one piece of advice I would give you is, as you look at the episodes, start with any episode that has a person's name. Because if it's named something else besides a person's name, it's a special.
Mm-hmm.
So pick any episode that has a person's name, and that'll give you a sense of how the episodes go. And my format has been pretty much unchanged since the beginning. So there's been a few little tweaks and tailored things I've done here and there, but it's pretty much as I do it today, started right away at episode one.
I love it, man. I love it. Well, I'm gonna put that information in the show notes. And as we wind down here, I just want to thank you for your time. And I'm gonna have to bounce here in a little bit. I got another call coming up, but it's always a pleasure to talk with other fellow podcast hosts. And I hope this is something that draws some more listenership your way. All right.
Thanks, Michael. Live long and prosper, everybody.
Thanks, Digger, man. Bye-bye.
Bye bye. Bye.
One of the coolest parts of doing this particular podcast is getting the chance to hear from other hosts while still being on this side of the mic. This is a great way to get a sample of lots of other shows that you otherwise wouldn't have ever known about. Now, if today's guest has you thinking about listening or guesting on their show, I bet they'd welcome either. Check the show notes for details. And if you're a podcast host who'd like to guest on this show, head over to archdevops.com/podcast to sign up. Keep your ear holes peeled for the next episode coming up soon.